Me, when my fighters are sparring or fighting, you'll notice that I don't give a lot of real-time advice. So, for instance, let's say they're trading, especially in the striking realm. I find that if the coach, you know, sometimes I work with other coaches, you know, and we have a difference of opinion. I believe that when you coach a fighter, and by the way, guys, if you haven't read, I know I've mentioned it before, if you haven't read The Inner Game of Tennis, get The Inner Game of Tennis. If you're an athlete, or I don't care if you play tennis or not, it's irrelevant. It could have been called The Inner Game of Mixed Martial Arts. It's irrelevant. Read that book. That's such a great book. It's a short book. It's an easy read. There's an audio as well. Get that book. I find that coaching, sometimes you're just hurting your fighter. You're just hurting your athlete. You're injuring them by overcoaching. There is a such thing as overcoaching, especially in the striking realm, because when you're striking, things are happening too fast. My coach is telling me uppercut, kick. He's puppeteering. He's telling me what to do in real time. By the time I register what you're saying, the moment is gone. And not only that, the fighter, you're telegraphing now. Like, let's say I actually obey your command. And if you notice, most fighters, when the coach is telling him uppercut, kick, knee, elbow, like the fighter is completely trying to ignore him. Most fighters will not respond. They'll not obey. They'll not do what the coach says. So, in my opinion, you're just kind of slowing the fighter down and you're killing his creativity. When people land a good shot, when fighters land a good shot, like look at Anderson Silva. He's the master of surprise. He's going to land a shot you didn't see coming. And that's why he's so great. You know, really, that's what it is. You know, I know it's cliche to quote Sung Tzu, but really, if you surprise your opponent, he's dead. I don't care if you know every defense there is in the book to armbar. If my armbar catches you by surprise, your defenses will not work. So creativity is a huge one. You know, I gotta make you look over here and hit you with this limb over there. You know, so creativity is huge. I feel like you're hampering your fighter's creativity, his imagination, his ability to surprise his opponent by just polluting his thoughts, but with your ideas. You know, your ideas out there. So, what I like to do when I'm coaching my fighters, I like to coach them after the round or after the fight, or excuse me, after the sparring. I'd be like, you know what? I would have tried this. I would have tried that. A lot of times when my fighter's fighting in real time, I'm giving him just suggestions, not really like trying to be overly controlling, because I find that if you're overly controlling, you're killing. Because the thing is, you know, sometimes I'll see one of my fighters spar with someone and I'll be like, you know, I think you should have done this. And then I go in there and spar with that guy and I'm like, you know what? I came up with a totally different solution. When I got in there, I got new data. I got new, and I find that coaches haven't been on the mat in a long time. They forget what it is to be on the mat. You know, they have this perfect idea that they think would work so easily, and the fighter or the athlete just doesn't get it. He does get it. It's just your idea is not as good as you think it is. It's not as, my favorite coaches is, you have an idea? Can you please show us? Go ahead. And like, get on the mat and demonstrate. If you can demonstrate it, I have a far more a greater respect for your coaching now. And I found that fighters that haven't done it in forever, the game has changed. What you remember, the way you see it, the game has changed. It's not working for your fighter for a variety of possible reasons. But if it's not working, I find the coaches kind of get down on the fighter a little bit. Whereas if you let that fighter kind of find his way, he'll be far more successful. So I believe that, you know, every fighter, you should teach him the fundamentals. And after a while, you got to kind of let go and let him find the way he does things. Like, for instance, a great example is Eddie Bravo. Eddie Bravo did jiu-jitsu very differently than Machado. He trained under Carlos Machado. Two brilliant grapplers, two very different styles. I think that, obviously, Eddie Bravo didn't start off with rubber guard. He started off with the fundamentals. He learned armbar. He learned, you know, triangle choke. He learned all sorts of stuff. And then he found, hey, you know what? My legs are very limber. You know, I have this idea I want to try. And he developed it and, you know, he gave birth to the rubber guard. However, if his trainer was very strict on him, maybe the rubber guard would have never been invented. Maybe his style would have never been invented. So what are you doing when you're overly molding your students, when you're being too strict on them? You're trying to get them to fight exactly how you understand fighting. You might be snuffing out their creativity, their brilliance, you know. So there are so many great examples of this. There's so many great trainers that would have done so poorly with a particular athlete. I don't want to name names, but I find that sometimes you have an athlete and a coach that just go so well together. And then you have an athlete and a coach that just are so polar opposite, the working together makes no sense. Okay, let's look at this scenario, okay? Imagine a fight, okay? You're fighting and Two fighters. Fighter A takes down fighter B. He passes his guard, mounts him, pounds him, hits him from the ground, armbars him. The match is over. Fighter B comes up to you and he says, "Coach, what did I do wrong? Why did this guy beat me?" Well, the boxing coach is going to tell him, "Hey, you should have had more footwork and jabbed and kept him at a distance and circled. You have no footwork. That's why he was able to grab you." The Muay Thai coach is going to be like, "Hey, you should have clinched him, spun around, did a foot sweep, throw him on his back or knee him or elbow him on the way in." He's going to give you a Muay Thai answer. The wrestling coach is going to be like, "Hey, you don't know how to sprawl. That guy shot a double. You got to sprawl and front headlock him." The jiu-jitsu guy is going to tell you, "Hey, you have no guard. The guy passed your guard right away. He mounted you. You don't know any escapes. You don't know how to shrimp." Every coach is going to give you his medicine. You know that great saying, and it's attributed to so many great characters, but they say, if all you have in your toolbox is a hammer, if you're a limited person, you only have it, if all you understand is the hammer, you see every problem as a nail. You see every problem as a nail. So that's where the MMA coach, in my opinion, has to step in. Because sometimes, well, of course, there's a question of level. And every coach is correct. Every coach, I could have used every single art to counter you. I could have literally used every single art. However, when you're building a game, you gotta sometimes cycle into like boxing. Okay, you're doing MMA, but you're really focusing on boxing now. Why? Because you see that as what's going to unlock your truest potential. Maybe your problem is grappling. Maybe your problem is you're always getting caught in guillotines. Okay, we need to focus for the next 3 to 4 weeks on countering your guillotines, like countering guillotines. When I take somebody down, I got to escape the guillotine. I cannot get guillotine no more. It's happening too often in practice. It's a weakness of mine. So we can go into this kind of thinking if we're an MMA coach, if we're somebody who does a lot of training in different arts. However, if you're a boxing coach, expect the boxing coach to give you a boxing-related answer. That's why it's so important to have an MMA coach. Like, for instance, if you're a boxing coach and you're training your fighter to fight a Machida, you don't know how to counter what Machida does. He's going to throw push kicks at your fighter. You don't know the counters to push kicks. That's where you got to say to your fighter, "Hey, that guy you're fighting, I saw he kicks a lot. Why don't you go ask that kicking coach, that Muay Thai coach, that karate coach, that MMA coach, what's the strategy for when he does that?" Because he doesn't punch much. If you look at Machida, he doesn't punch. He only punches ones and twos. He doesn't punch a combination. He doesn't go to the body. He doesn't throw boxing punches per se. So you're drilling, countering, boxing. This guy ain't going to use boxing on you. He's not going to use boxing. He's going to kick to the head. He's going to fake a punch kick. He's going to fake a punch kick. He's going to fake a punch knee. He's going to do a punch and angle off at a karate angle. He's not going to do boxing stuff. So that's where an MMA coach is going to be like, "Hey, we got to figure out a different strategy. You're a boxer. How do you use your boxing against a karate guy?" That's a question that boxers can't answer. They've never fought a karate guy. They've never dealt with these things. So that's why I like to tell guys, you know, like, do MMA, have an MMA coach, absolutely. But go wrestling in the wrestling club. Yes, go jiu-jitsu in jiu-jitsu club. Go, you know, work individually as well. However, make sure you have a global understanding, because if you get too orthodox in one realm, you're going to get derailed quite quick. But again, that's what, Kenneth, to answer your question, I love about Freddie. He understands that. He understands that he's only one part of the whole pie. Dominic Cruz said interview that you should always drill technique at 100% speed and power, because then it's only way your brain will know how to do it. Do you agree with this? Yes and no. Yes and no. Okay, so Kenneth, I'm going to give you a quick answer. Let's say you're a beginner and I'm showing you double leg and you're doing it wrong. I'm going to slow it down. I always say, do it as fast as you can do it right. Do it as fast as you can do it right. So as you're doing it right, I'm going to ask you to do it faster. Right? Because sometimes when you try to do it fast, you skip 2-3 steps. You're getting it wrong. It's sloppy. Especially in jiu-jitsu. It looks weak. It looks bad. Okay? Also, maybe you're not warmed up. So let's start 60%, 70%. Again, we're talking about technique. We're not talking about sparring. We're talking about technique. Okay? So if I'm drilling duck under, I'm going to do it fast. Yes, I believe in doing it fast, because in a fight, I'm going to do it fast. However, if I'm doing it wrong, that's when I ask my students to slow down. Do it slowly. And then as he's doing it more and more right, I'm going to ask him to pick up speed. So as long as you're doing it correctly, technically correctly, I think speed is a great factor. Yes. However, always keeping in mind, I'm trying to avoid wear and tear as much as possible. But guys, I'm 39 years old. I'm going to go wrestle today. I'm healthier than a lot of my students. Why? Because they grind their joints out like crazy. And then they wonder why their neck is hurting, their shoulders hurting. Guys, keep your joints healthy. They have a limited amount of grinding. You know, you can grind your shoulder for 10 years, then you're like, oh, I'm really good at jiu-jitsu now, but I can't roll no more. What was the point of getting good at jiu-jitsu? You're finally good at it. You're finally smart. You finally know what to do. You finally know how to move. Oh, but I can't move no more. So that's why I always say, you know, I always roll like 85%, 90%, never 100, you know, between 70 and 90. Let's say 70 and 90, I fluctuate between there. But when I'm drilling, yes, I can develop speed with drilling. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's where it's my partner's cooperating with me. He's moving. He's letting me work my technique, drilling technique. However, when I'm sparring, I never go 100%. You know, maybe we culminate. Let's say we're doing 10 rounds of, let's say, boxing sparring, Muay Thai sparring, whatever it is. The last two, three rounds, maybe we'll go hard, really hard. Like, let's hit it 95%, but never go 100%. 100% is only on fight night, only. And not even on fight. I'm going to do that, like, sparingly throughout the fight because I never want to go literally 100%. What if I don't finish the guy? Then I need to go in recovery. So it's almost never good to go 100%. It's never good to go literally 100% in terms of fighting when you're actually in live combat. Number one reason why, it's injury. Number two reason, you won't be able to train as often. Okay, you won't be able to train as often. You won't get as many rounds in. You know, it's all about the secret to training is training the most amount possible while not getting injured. While not getting injured, while having as little setbacks as possible. You know, I had an athlete getting ready for a fight, comes in sparring. I think it was the second training session. He kicks and breaks his foot, like injures his foot really badly. They have to go back home. Why do you kick 100%? Like when I throw a kick, I throw like 70, 80%. Why? Because I know that I might snag an elbow. I might snag a bone. I might hurt my foot. But the guy kicked like really hard. Broke, like probably, you know, fractured a foot. About like his foot just swell up. You just got to be sensible. You got to be smart. You know, injuries are, you know, injuries can really kill your skill level because they're going to sideline you. And when you get injured, there's just some injuries you just can't work around, so you're sidelined. And how's that helping you? It's not.